All right, everybody, it's time for another episode of the podcast. But first and foremost, I want to go ahead and give a special shout out to our sponsor at SuperPowerCollectibles.com. SuperPowerCollectibles.com is your one-stop shop for all things awesome in toys and collectibles. These guys have an amazing selection of cool things that you should be adding to your collection. Are you a fan of the SH Monster Arts figures? Oh, those things are incredibly cool. And did you hear that we're getting aliens and predators in that line? Well, you can pre-order those right now at SuperPowerCollectibles.com. About the incredibly cool SH Figuarts line, you love those awesome Power Rangers figures they've been doing? SuperPowerCollectibles.com is a great place to pick those up. You like DC Comics, you like Marvel Comics, you like Kotobukiya's awesome collectible statues. All of that stuff can be purchased right there at SuperPowerCollectibles.com. They have an amazing selection. You get stuff from DC. You get stuff from NECA. You get SH Figuarts. You get Star Wars. You get video game collectibles. You get vinyl figures. There is just an incredible assortment of things to pick up. So hey, come on, you've been working hard, right? You've been earning that money. You need to reward yourself. Well, you should do that by heading on over to SuperPowerCollectibles.com and buying yourself something brand new to add to your collection. Go check them out. Now, before we get into today's discussion, I need to give you guys a bit of a disclaimer, or two disclaimers, actually. I guess first and foremost, I need to tell you that we will be discussing the DC Masters of the Universe comic series. If you have not read these comics and you don't want anything spoiled, I would suggest just skipping this episode. We're going to be very spoiler heavy here. We will be discussing the Masters of the Universe 6-issue miniseries, the current ongoing series, and even the beginning of DC versus Masters of the Universe. And we will be spoiling quite a bit of it because we're going to talk about the plots in detail. So if you don't want spoilers, I would skip this until after you've read those issues. So there's your fair warning right there. Disclaimer number two, I'm a big proponent of everybody knowing that it's cool to have your own opinion about things, and I think you can already tell where I'm going with this. This is the same way I felt in the Man of Steel episode. Just keep in mind that the opinions in this episode are those of myself only and my guests and don't necessarily represent, obviously, the masses. This is just us wanting to kind of talk about our concerns and the things that we like about the current DC comics. So, wanted to get that disclaimer out of the way. If you disagree with us, that is totally cool. And that's great. Everybody should have their own opinion about things. Now, with that being said, I really hope you guys enjoy this. I had a total blast actually getting to sit down and discuss these books in length. It's something that all of us have been wanting to do for some time now. So, without further ado, why don't we go ahead and jump right into today's episode of The Geek Easy.
Greetings, fellow nerds and geeks. Why don't you pull yourself up a chair, grab yourself a beverage, and prepare to enjoy a geek-tastic conversation. Welcome to the Geek Easy.
Welcome back to the Geek Easy. My name is Pixel Dan, and today I want to talk about He-Man. I know. This is supposed to be the show where I get away from the things that I talk about all the time, but I think this has to be done. You see, Masters of the Universe has a new ongoing series of comic books from DC Comics. And, well, it's kind of split the fan base, I think. Many people love them, many people hate them. There's some discussion to be had. So I felt it necessary to bring on a couple guests to discuss this comic book series with me. And who better to ask to talk about He-Man than my partners in crime from the Roast Gooble Dinner podcast? That's right, it's a Roast Gooble invasion of the Geek Easy. So introducing my guests, the one, the only, the Irish, Eamon O'Donoghue, and Penny Dreadful herself. And Penny Dreadful herself, Danielle Gelerter. What is up, Danielle and Eamon?
Hey, we're like the NWO invading your podcast, Dan. It's time to talk about He-Man. What are you doing hiding out over here on the Geek Easy?
I know, right?
Pokemon! Look. Once you're in.
I love the music, yes.
I think it's pretty impossible for me to avoid talking about He-Man all the time, because come
once
on.
Yeah, once you're in the RGD, you can't get out, Dan.
That's right.
The RGD.
The first rule about RGD, you don't talk about RGD.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. I know that Eamon has been dying to talk about these comics, and I've kind of seen him talking about these comics online, which is why I was like, we need to get on a podcast and have these discussions.
Yeah, it's not my best medium of expressing myself, but I haven't got on He-Man and Oregon about over like a year or so like that, you know, for various reasons, and I decided to, you know, dip my toe in. I dipped my toe in. You dip your toe in.
Dip your toe in. You came back swinging.
Oh, yeah.
You were like, oh, who likes this comic? I don't. Let's go.
And it was great. I made some popcorn, and I just read that thread. It was awesome.
Well, that'll bring us to this right here. Let's make sure that everybody understands that we do appreciate everybody's opinion. Everybody's going to have their own opinion on this. And if you guys don't agree with what we're talking about today, please don't take it personally. We're totally cool with if you love this comic, if you're really happy about it, that is awesome, and we're happy for you. And honestly, I think I can speak for most of us where I say it's awesome just seeing He-Man having a new medium of entertainment out there.
Absolutely.
I mean, as long as the brand is living on in some form, even if I'm not 100% loving it, I'm just happy to see that it's out there and that people are being able to go in and pick up comic books and stuff like that. So, but I think you can probably gather by the general tone of things that the three of us aren't really that happy with the comics so far. Maybe we don't all hate them, but we're definitely not super happy with them.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe let's go ahead and talk about that. Let's explain to everybody what we may not be liking about it, or maybe the things that we do like about it. Maybe there are a few things, maybe there are a few little beacons of hope in these comics that we do enjoy. So why don't we go ahead and start with the first 6-issue miniseries, which was kind of the thing that started off DC's Masters of the Universe comic book run. I know that they kind of mixed in some of those digital comics with it, but we'll go ahead and focus just on that 6-issue series first and kind of talk about that. So, does anybody want to kind of lead things off here? Anybody ready to jump right in on this?
Ladies first.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Throwing Danielle under the bus. Here
thanks,
we go.
Thanks, Eamon. Just like old times.
16-wheeler.
You know, when I first heard about the comic, I was really excited. Picked up the first issue. And at that point in the 6-issue miniseries, I was really keeping an open mind. Like, I was pretty okay with the idea. At first, I was a little kind of, I think we talked about this before, the premise of the 6-issue miniseries was very similar to the Once Upon a Time TV show where they wipe everybody's, Skeletor wipes everybody's memory out, just like the queen, evil queen does in the Once Upon a Time, and nobody remembers who they are, and they are all leading these different lives, and you know, you're kind of waiting for them to get Adams on this quest now to find the sword. Zoar goes to him and is leading him in the right direction. And I thought the first issue wasn't too bad. I wasn't thrilled with some of the redesigns in it, but I didn't hate it. I did not hate the first issue. He fights Beastman, as I recall. There was some nonsense with that. Beastman has a mohawk. I don't know why. Mohawk Beastman. Adam's fighting him. He has an axe. He throws the axe away. It looks like he tries to throw the axe at Beastman, which doesn't make any sense, and then grabs a stick instead to fight Beastman with. That might have been the first sign of strange things to come. I have an axe. I'm going to throw it away and fight you with a stick instead. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought the first issue was okay. At that point, I was still okay with it, I guess. Next.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the whole premise of the 6-issue series was supposed to be that Skeletor has basically found a way to wipe the memory of all the heroes in Eternia, and he's like taken over, right? Like at this point, he's won. Skeletor's won, and he's wiped the memory of Adam and everybody else, so none of them know who they are, so he's got nobody to fight them.
We never told how, by the way. We never told
how. Yeah, we never really
He just
really
did it.
How.
could have done it years ago, but, you know, he did it now. He obviously found a new magic book trick or something.
Skeletor, I'm okay with that. I can accept that. Skeletor was always trying all kinds of crazy ways to take over Grayskull anyway. So I kind of come into this thinking, all right, so he finally found something that worked. You know, whatever. Yeah. It worked for him. And honestly, when they first explained that was going to be the story arc of the 6-issue series, I was like, that sounds kind of cool. Like, I'm kind of interested to see where that goes. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of with Danielle where I do feel like it started out not too bad. I mean, it's kind of neat how Adam's like, he thinks he's like, what, this woodsman, basically. Yeah. He's like living in the woods and he's caring for his sick father, and he's chopping down a trees and all that fun stuff, and then Zoar shows up.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
And, yeah.
And I like that Randor seems to remember, like, he's the only one who's like, he wants to eat off the good china or something. Like, he's still talking like he's a king, kind of.
Yeah. Is this the good china? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was called good china too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what he says.
You gotta love that. Wow, we got China Eternium. My God.
Oh, yeah, they call it China.
Well, we do know the Chinese are taking over the world, so why not Eternia too?
You know, the universe.
That's just clever thinking, that is.
That's true. That's true. Very true. Maybe he got it from Marlena. She brought it from Earth.
I think so.
She brought it on the spaceship.
This is way better than that other stuff.
Never leave Earth without your good china.
Never leave Earth without your good china. You know, it's slotted in the backseat of the Rainbow Warrior.
Exactly.
That's what it was. Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? My first question out the door was like, so who is this comic book aimed at? This the first issue? Because it's like, I'm still actually mystified about who this comic book is aimed at, because it introduces no characters. It assumes we all know who Skeletor is. So it's obviously aiming for Masters of the Universe fans.
Yeah.
But they've changed character designs and stuff like that. And we're still aiming for Masters of the Universe fans. And it's just... So why change things up? I think people can go back, and it's a great thing about the podcast. You see, I can just go back to episode da da da, where you'll hear me saying, I remember when we first saw the first designs of the comic book, and you'll all remember me saying, look at the way the Sorceress has been redesigned. If that doesn't tell you what the level of thinking behind this comic book is, I don't know what else will. And lo and behold, there you go. The Sorceress looks like, yeah, that's about the level of comic book we're getting, all right. And if you like to look at a sorceress, the chances are you're going to be the person that likes the comics. And that's good. And I think, like a lot of you guys, I was kind of like, I was just delighted to have He-Man on the shelves, and it was DC making it. It was just great to have a He-Man seeing the Master Universe logo, you know, in the M section, alongside, you know, other comics titled M that I can't think of right now.
right.
You know, And I was just delighted, but it's still a mystery who this comic book is aimed at. If it's aimed for new readers, you introduce the characters. That's comic book. That's just storytelling 101. I'm not a major storyteller, although I am learning because I'm a gatekeeper. I'm trying to like learn what you do and don't do in stories. And I am, and there are rules. Unless you're a super brilliant type of person, it's like art. Everyone looks at Picasso and says, "Oh, I only draw cubes." Well, no, Picasso got bored sick of drawing amazingly realistic things, and he just got too bored because he was so awesome he got bored of painting realistic stuff. That's why he went nuts and started doing crazy stuff. And it's like, if you're an amazing writer, or you have established yourself as an amazing writer, then later on you can afford to twist things around. But right out the door, to give us a twist, it's like, oh well, that's brave or foolish. I'll let you decide, the reader. You know, and it's just it makes no sense that so many writing rules have just been kicked to the curb straight away. It does, and I understand one could argue back then that the characters are introduced via Adam and Teela's questionable dialogue and talking conversations and the little interference that they go to. And quite frankly, that whole Adam and Teela first story arc, it just seems like a cheap 80s sword and sorcery movie. You know, it's like a bad episode of Xena, Hercules and whatever Hercules' sidekick was at the time.
Right. And it goes downhill after that.
And it goes downhill after that.
It does, yeah.
And it's not Eternia. It has no familiarity. No, whether anyone likes to say it or not, it says, oh, there were so many versions of He-Man anyway, there's no real one version. Wrong. Across the board of all material that was ever produced in the 80s, there was at least a language of Eternia. It had weird plants, weird creatures, there was a sense of Dalism about stuff. I know it's quite pushing it out there. Salvador Dali is a painter, he's very abstract and weird, blah, blah, blah. Yes. There's an element of that. You see that in all of all the toys, all the artwork. There's a little sense of odd and weird with Eternia, and it's especially apparent in Filmation, you know, where you've got crazy gnarly trees, you've got crazy looking mushrooms, it's just a very odd world. And this is not Eternia. This could be anywhere. This is ye olde England in the 13th century with a skull dude overlord. That's all, you know, it could be Willow. It could be anything. There is nothing to suggest that this is Masters of the Universe a bit different. There's nothing, there's none of the feel. And it's like, well, oh, you have to update things. Well, I would argue, why do you have to update things? If you want to update things, because I think what happens then is the argument becomes like, oh, you just don't want updates, fans are too precious. No, wrong. Everybody is okay with an update as long as it's good. If it's a good update, if it's a worthy update.
And well, that's kind of my big thing too with it, like exactly what you're saying. And I have always had a problem with any property where the reboot happens and they just redesign things for the sake of redesigning things. That is the wrong way to go about stuff. And especially like what you said is perfect too. The way they've established this comic, it's obviously aimed at us, the people who already know and love Masters of the Universe, because there's nothing in this to introduce these characters to a new audience. This is all assuming we already know these people and we know what they're fighting for. Yet they went out of their way to redesign these characters. And, you know, I'm okay with some redesigns, and we've talked about this before too. There's a right way to do it, and there's a wrong way to do it. The Four Horsemen in the 2002 era was the right way to do it.
You got it. Yep.
Because they understand what He-Man was.
They get it. They get it. Yep.
Exactly. Yep. And then, okay, you look at page one of issue two, and you see what Castle Grayskull looks like here, and that is the wrong way to do a redesign. What is this nonsense, right? Like, you open this right up, and you look at it, and you go, that's Castle Grayskull? No, it's not.
It's awful.
That is not Castle Grayskull. We know what Castle Grayskull looks like, and it's not that, okay?
Well, which version? Like, because it actually changes look through the comic.
It does. It's every issue.
You know, 1 minute Merman has a tail, the next minute he doesn't have a tail. You've got to love that.
Yeah. Definite inconsistencies. And that's another, that's definitely a problem. And I can't help but feel it's like, and I really, really don't want to offend any of the artists on this, but I feel like they're trying to, you know, put their own mark on these characters. And I just don't like that. I don't like when an artist feels like they've got to make, you know, well, I got to make this character mine. I got to change something or do something so that I've left my mark on it. And it's just like, don't do that. These guys are already well established. We know these characters. We got a general idea of what these characters look like already in our heads that have been there since we were children. You can't make drastic changes like throwing a big tail on Merman and just be like, well, this is what he looks like in my Masters of the Universe, and not expect us to go, ugh, dude, come on. That's not right. You know, that's not Merman.
Yeah. People never like those changes. I don't understand why they think that's a good idea, like, to do something like that. And if you look at that miniseries and compare it to where things are now, it's gotten worse. Like, He-Man's new costume, Skeletor's new costume. Geez. Like, the redesigns are getting more and more extreme and bizarre.
Teela
so
is
the point where
less
they're...
and is a lesser character. That I've got a big problem with how the women are done in this comic.
Me too.
A big problem. It seems the best way to make a female more powerful is turn her into a bit of a nasty bit of work and make her wear a lot less.
Or kill them off if
or
they're
kill
too
them
powerful.
Off. Yeah, you know, kill them off. Go to all this trouble of capturing them and then just snap their neck. Just do that.
I was okay. You know, I was like, I didn't like the redesigns. I was keeping an open mind to see where the story was going to go until I hit issue 6 of the miniseries. And at that point, I was like, blah, 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 when I read that, because the 6th issue of the miniseries was just like terrible. They just totally went off the rails with it. Skeletor decapitates the sorceress. He-Man is like slaughtering people. You know, Orko.
Yeah, people, actual people, not robots.
Yeah.
People.
Orko turns evil, you know, the most innocent character in Masters of the Universe has betrayed, you know, the good guys. He-Man, like, punches Skeletor's jaw off and blood is flying out. I don't know where the blood is coming from, but blood's flying everywhere. It was horrible. And then at the end, Skeletor's, like, you know, broken before some, like, mysterious, you know, leader or whatever, some mysterious master of his. Who's probably evil Orko, if they're going to go that cliche.
Oh, Uncle Montork.
Montork.
It's just that. That was when I was.
Drielle, woman scorned. That was it.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Why would you do all this stuff to He-Man?
Exactly.
Like,
shock value, kids.
Shock value. Yeah, and see, and that's not cool. Yeah, it's shock value for the sake of shock value. That's not, you know, that's not the right way to tell a story like this. We don't care about that. And, like, I feel like there's too many people that always want to say, well, you know, we know how cheesy He-Man was in the 80s, so now we're going to make it violent and brutal, and we're going to change things up. And that is not what we want. At least that's not what I want.
Yeah.
I know we can't really speak for everybody because some people really do like the more mature version of He-Man. But like you were just saying with having a problem with He-Man running around just killing people like that, I have serious issue with that. And I understand that this is a war. I understand it's a battle and stuff like that's got to happen. But man, this is just the fight for right and justice and make things the right way. But he's going to do that without killing people. And this is the same problem I'm going to have if like they make a Masters of the Universe live action movie and He-Man kills anybody in that movie. I'm going to be very upset, you know, like, and I feel like that's one of those things that people just don't get. They feel like in order to make this something that adults are going to appreciate, they've got to add all this unnecessary violence and they've got to add death because, you know, that's the way things are. You know, people like things like Game of Thrones, so we got to make He-Man like that. So, you know, and I don't want that. I don't want He-Man killing anybody. I want him doing whatever he can do to stop a death. Like he's got to obviously win the battle, but he's also got to go out of his way to make sure he doesn't kill the person he's battling. You know what I mean? That shows the kind of person he is.
Well, it was just done with such kind of flippancy that's what I mean. I mean, we are talking about I would imagine the argument to that would back it, which is not, bearing in mind, it's not my argument back, but an argument back to that would be, well, you know, we are living in a very savage world here. It is monsters and demons, battle axes, giant tigers, and whatnot. You know, it would probably make a bit more sense that He-Man would slice through people.
Yeah.
Perhaps. While I'm not necessarily He-Man has to be on the level of Superman, it was done in such a way that it was so flippant about it. I mean, it's like we seem to be living in this world where making something gritty automatically is the mark of quality. It's not. Good storytelling is the mark of quality. Good quality art is the mark of quality. And of all the... The MV Creations comic, while in my personal opinion didn't punch hard enough, they were proper He-Man stories. It felt like we were in Eternia. It felt like we were talking to these characters. It didn't feel old or dated. It still had that freshness, and it's like that kind of Eternia, the Eternia that we're familiar with, has never really been fully explored in comics. I mean, I don't really count the Star Marvel Star comics, and maybe the UK comics to some degree. The most violent comics we've ever had of Masters of the Universe was, again, back to the original DC, and I dare say that would be another argument the creators of this comic book would say that, well, you know, the first DC comics ever made in 1982 were quite violent. If you read them again, they were superficially violent. They had lots of medieval talk and things like that, but the Birdmen fighting the Beastmen, there was no blood there. Lots of whacks and thuds. I mean, even in the Alcala mini comics back in what you got with the figures, you know, the characters punched hard. Have at it, you fiends. Feel the force of my claws.
Yeah.
And you saw these guys getting seven bells of hell beaten out of them. But it was never bloody or gratuitous or anything like that. It was just, it had that kind of pulpy, well, whatever's happened to him, it looks really painful.
He-Man kills some monsters, like the Glorm and stuff, like, but it's not gratuitous, like you said, and it's not a person, it's a monster that's,
yeah,
you know...
It's something like that. Now, while that's not to say we can't have a He-Man comic that's a bit more mature and He-Man would do maybe more adult and oriented things, it's the flippancy which I don't like. It's the lack of consequence. You know, this is the... Are we forgetting who He-Man is? He's the Prince of Eternia. Yeah. You don't go around slaughtering your subjects, bro. That's not a good way.
There's no characterization for He-Man. Like, why should we care about He-Man? Like, you mentioned the MV Creations comic. They got the feel right. You could hear He-Man's voice when you were reading this. You know, this, I have no feel. I don't care about this version of He-Man. It's like there's no characterization. It's just like the war. They're in this battle with the Horde. There are no poignant moments other than maybe issue 5 which we can talk about after the Shadow Weaver and Adora. I do like some of
that
the Adora
stuff. That was good. Yeah. But then That was always going to be good. You've had to work very hard to mess that up. I mean, you really would have had to work very hard because that was, even in the Sword and Source or Sword Secret of the Sword, that dichotomy was always very interesting, the stepmother-daughter relationship kind of thing. And they amplified that up.
And that's the one thing I like about these comics is that we've always said, you know, Adora must have done bad things when she was in the Horde, and we never saw them in the cartoon.
Right.
So you're kind of seeing some of that, which is interesting. But that's the one thing that I think I can really praise is that they're showing some of that. But even then, it's going a bit too dark. Places sometimes, but anyway, the stuff with He-Man, there's no characterization for He-Man. There's no characterization for any of these characters. Teela is reprehensible. Like,
what is going on with that? Like, that didn't really start until we got to that new arc, though. But I guess she was kind of a little more pushy in the 6-issue series. But man, when they started that new ongoing, it was just like, I hate this character. I hate this Teela. I should not hate Teela. But no. Yeah.
And what? Now, people may boil stuck with, oh, but that's just your opinion. Well, it is our opinion that we think it's not very good. But on a practical level, here is why it's not very good. On a practical, not opinion-based level. A character that bullies anybody is a weak character. A person who bullies is weak. Now, Teela herself admitted that Mechanic was picked on because evidently he was born with a mechanical neck, according to this.
Yeah,
or
weird.
Or born with the neck. Yeah. He was Mechanic. So Mechanic was teased as a kid, and Teela took exception to this, and she kind of told all the kids not to. But through some weird fuzzy logic, she says, well, now that all those kids have stopped bullying you, I can be the only one to bully you.
It makes no sense.
Now, seriously, have a think about that.
Yeah.
What kind of behavior is that? Now, Teela, in all of the incarnations, and again, some would argue, but Teela was a bit more feisty in Mike Young. She was, arguably, touching on the annoying in Mike Young, but she was never this bad. She was never this bad, and Filmation Teela was strong, elegant, and she felt like a royal, the captain of the guard. This character does not feel like captain of the guard. She doesn't feel like an elegant leader. She doesn't feel like the love interest.
No, she feels like a bloodthirsty. She's bloodthirsty, and she's just angry all the time, and she hates everybody. Like, what's up with her wanting to just kill everything in sight?
Yeah,
And she gets mad at He-Man for not killing people. like what is going on with that nonsense? It's just
And their dialogue has taken up so much room, it actually obscures some of the action sequences, which is hysterical. You're so focused on getting this bickering between He-Man and Teela, your speech bubbles are getting so large that they're blocking out
the dialogue
action.
Is, It's vapid. It's vapid dialogue that you'd see on like some show directed at like tweens on Nickelodeon on, you know, Saturday afternoon. They bicker with each other like they're like 13 years old. It's so annoying. And they use this modern slang, like Teela says one of the horde troopers was checking out her butt and calls the horde trooper a total perv or something.
Yeah.
And what?
That just happened, yeah. Oh, that was in what issue was that?
It was the DC versus, wasn't it DC versus?
Oh yeah, it was
Justice
League. It was the first issue of the DC versus Masters, and because then she says that, and then like Man at Arms even says, well, they're like robots.
It's ridiculous. I really think Keith Giffen, like I have to wonder if he takes. I just don't think he takes Masters of the Universe seriously at all, or doesn't get it, because there's one line in particular in one of the issues. It's issue 2 of the main series where He-Man is like talking about Hordak, and he says, I can't, you know, it seems too hard to believe, you know, an army's invading and a pan-dimensional vampire. And then King Randor says, well, how about a giant green cat that you can ride around on, or a man made out of moss who can control plants?
Yeah.
Like, Randor wouldn't be that would just be their everyday world. He wouldn't,
right,
like, be aware that that's weird at all. Like, that's not weird to them.
That totally feels like the writer's making fun of it, doesn't it? Or, like,
yeah.
That's the writer's talking to us.
Yeah.
That's the writer saying to us, we'd be silly for questioning this. You know, just like we'd be silly for questioning Teela's red hair, which was explained away with nothing. You know, and it's this kind of talking back to us, the reader, that I find a little bit condescending. It's like, you're aiming that back at us. That is not a natural dialogue between two people. That comment to King Randor is not aimed at He-Man. That comment from King Randor is aimed at us, the reader.
Yeah.
For
yeah, exactly.
How
that.
Dare we question some silliness or any... It's a cheap shot back at the reader, and it alienates the reader. So right there, that's a thing that you don't do. You do not alienate your reader with that kind of dialogue or insult their intelligence by saying, don't ask about why I changed my hair color. Don't ask about it. Don't talk about it. That's not good enough in a comic book. We haven't had an establishment of these characters long enough for you to get that flippant with them. If this is 100 issues time or 50 issues time, I'd say, fair enough. You might be stretching it by going that way. But we haven't... Is this seriously how you're going to introduce Masters of the Universe? How are you going to get new readers on with this as well? Because it's just... How?
That's the problem. I don't think... We're going back to exactly what we said a little bit ago. I don't feel like this is going to get new readers, because they're already trying to aim this at the people who are already going to buy it. And then they're, you know, not necessarily even making us happy with it. So I don't see how this is going to pick up anybody new.
That's actually the big point. It's like, well, look, we've got a DC comic. Are we happy with it? No. People who like the current DC comic, all that can happen is that we improve it. That it gets improved. So why would you argue against improving something? That seems to be the argument. And you'll hear other arguments saying, oh, it's not that bad. To say something is not that bad means it is actually mostly bad and only some bits are good. That's all you're saying with that statement. You're saying it's not that bad. Actually, it's bad, and you're just trying to gleam a little bit of goodness out of it. Generally, something that is considered critical worthy or well respected or of a high quality, it's not that bad. It's either good or it's not. It's either high quality or it's not. And there is something as quality, and there are certain things that aren't subjective. People, a lot of the arguments you hear people so on back saying, who are defenders of this comic. Although why you would defend mediocrity, I have no idea. But people get very challenged when you say, listen, are you sure? That's really not that good, and here's why. And this is not just an opinion thing. There are just... I mean, because I'm only coming to grasp of what actually works for a story. And anybody out there who has read anybody, how do you build a story? And you've got your three phases and all this kind of stuff. You build up the story, introduce, and you do things via... There are certain set rules. Very few have been adhered to with any of the DC comics, and I'm especially looking at some of the origin comics, which are one big load of nothing. They're nothing. Yeah, they're not a start. They're not a middle. They're not an end. They're just a bunch of rambling words.
There's no story, especially the Hordak one. There's no plot. There's a vignette. There's no plot at all.
The Hordak one just didn't even make sense to me. And like Hordak and Zodak are brothers now for no reason. And what was even going on in that? Like,
Hordak absorbs souls, people's souls.
Yeah, yeah. So like, what? Okay, a war just ended and everybody died except Zodak because Hordak spared him just so that he could talk to him a bunch of nonsense. And then at the very end of it, he killed Zodak, I think. And then that was the end of it. And I was just like, what did I read? What did I just read? What was this?
Exactly. And not even to mention how Hordak looks in these comics. Hordak is what? This H.R. Geiger crazy alien looking thing?
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about that for a minute. First of all, in the Origins comic, he looked more like regular Hordak. He didn't look that different. And also, why was that story a million years before Prince Adam was born? Did you notice? Okay, it said that on the first page. One million years before Prince
Precisely
Adam.
Precisely to the day.
What? What? Yep. You know?
A million years ago. Like, you know, we complained a while ago about the bios being only 500 years, and they changed it to 5,000, which was better, but now they've gone the opposite. It's like a million years ago.
Hordak and Zodak were running around fighting each other a million years ago, and also Zodak died then. What is going on? You know? So we learn in that origin story, I guess it's an origin story for Hordak. Looked like he was already a Hordak to me, but you know, whatever. Yeah. Origin story, we learn that Hordak's like absorbing souls for whatever reason. And then when Hordak, but like there's no explanation for like what happened in between there and these other comics, and why in these other comics Hordak is just like this big jumble of cables and weird electric weirdness, and he's gigantic and doesn't look anything like the Hordak that we're used to. Like, what is going on?
I'm guessing his body was destroyed probably by King Grayskull or something at some point, and he's probably trying to rebuild himself. It's like his spirit is becoming merged with mechanical stuff to try to come back to life somehow. That's the only thing I can think of.
Well, I mean, I guess Hordak has always had like that. He's always been the big technology guy, right? Yeah. Like that was the way Filmation always pushed him and everything. Like he's a sorcerer or whatever, but he's really likes the technology. So
he
I guess
turn
this
into
was their
a rocket.
Yeah, I guess this was their way of like just really going over the top with the whole technology thing. They're like, okay, well, if Hordak loves himself some technology, we're just going to make him, you know, living inside these machines or whatever it is.
I see that. Like, sorcery failed him, right? Like, it wasn't enough to save his body, right? So he has to turn to science, and that becomes his preferred means of doing things.
Which is fine. You know, that's all that fine. If that was actually explained to us. I mean, we're doing a lot of the work. We're doing a lot of writer's work here right now.
We're telling you, whereas
we should be told about this, because this is a new world, and anybody who doesn't know about He-Man hasn't got a clue. And anybody who knows He-Man are sat here doing this, trying to make it up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
so
like,
I don't know why you're slicing this, boys and girls. Yeah. It's not good. We shouldn't be having these discussions. We should be having discussions about plots. About, what is going to happen here? What is this overarching mean? I mean, you guys, we all seem to be in agreement, though, that the Dispara thing and the way the Adora thing is handled is actually rather interesting.
It is interesting.
Yes.
It's a new twist on a story that we all know. I mean, it's basically this series has been Secret of the Sword, just with a new twist to it. Yeah. It's interesting, the timeline, though. Like, you know, now it's happening while the Masters are basically renegades and the Horde has taken over Eternia, and this is how the whole thing's happening, rather than He-Man going over to Etheria where the Horde has already taken over.
Which
it's like they're
going to be Mike Young's idea, wasn't it? Although Mike Young were never going to have She-Ra, were they? They were always,
no,
they
that,
were
yeah.
always going to have Masters being forced underground.
Yeah, it depends who you ask. If you ask Dean Stefan, he says no. If you ask Gary Hartle, he says they were, so who knows?
All right, okay.
Well, you know, I don't think they were, but it's tough to say.
Either way, anyway, the Horde were eventually going to overrun Eternia, and
the
boys were going to be forced on the ground.
I was going to say, I think this series definitely has influence from all those different aspects. They've basically taken Secret of the Sword from Filmation, and they've kind of meshed it with stuff we've heard from MYP or the bios on Classics, and they've sort of made this story with it. And I think maybe that's why, I mean, like, I am a little more accepting of all this, you know, and I do find the Despara stuff interesting.
Yeah.
And Danielle was even talking about earlier how we have had discussions in the past where we've wondered about the terrible things Adora did while she was a Force captain for the Horde, having no idea who she really was.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of finally exploring some of that for us, you know? Yep. We're getting, like, the Despara thing, how she's wearing that Horde armor that almost looks like Hordak. I think that's a really cool design, and it's just I have been really excited to see where that story was going to go.
I love the idea of Adora wearing Hordak type gear. I just don't like that look, that design. I just think it's not I'm not really too big on that design, to be honest. But I love the idea of her going and wearing Hordak's mask. I think that's a very good thing, and I like that they're continuing on the play that Hordak is still obsessed with his own face, and I kind of like that kind of sanity side of things, where his face is on everything, because that's very, it's very fascist, and it's very, you know, it's very, you know, very loud and obnoxious, and it's not Skeletor. It instantly separates Hordak from Skeletor. That's Hordak. Some is people. A far more of a he's a far more vain creature to Skeletor is Hordak.
Yeah,
yeah. And there was somebody also made a good point too, that since Hordak is really pushing the idea on Adora that she's his daughter, that it kind of, but she looks nothing like him, so it kind of makes sense that he's making her like wear that mask to sort of reflect that they're related somehow.
Oh yeah.
That's kind of interesting. I like the way her, I like her hair. Like I think Despara is like generally, I think people like how they're handling the Despara stuff.
Yeah, I think that does seem to be the big thing that everyone's like at least kind of behind on.
Yeah, and it's what we've always said, like Dan was saying. We've always said, you know, this was the unseen sort of stuff that we wondered about, like what she did. And this adds a really interesting dimension to the character, because eventually when she does become She-Ra, she's going to have to struggle with the things she did in the past. This is like going to haunt her. You know, this is really a good mixture of elements to make an engaging character.
Right. It's something that She-Ra has that He-Man doesn't.
Exactly.
You know, He-Man never has to live with any sort of guilt of terrible things he's done, because he's always been a good guy. She-Ra has to live with the fact that she has done some terrible things to some very innocent people, and she's got to fight with that forever, which adds a whole new layer to She-Ra. Yeah. You know, that makes her not just a girl version of He-Man. She is like her own character who's struggling with lots of emotional stuff that He-Man just doesn't understand.
She's got emotional baggage, whereas He-Man does not.
Exactly.
He-Man might have a few daddy issues, but on the whole, he's pretty all right going. He had it pretty easy.
Yeah.
If there's anything that I hope that we get from these comics is that, like, when we finally do get to see her as She-Ra and she becomes a regular part of these comics, that's the kind of story arcs I'd like to see with her. Yeah. I want to see her battling with that sort of emotional scarring that she has.
Stuff that's emotional in Masters of the Universe has actually been very rarely, it was skimmed on, but it's been very, very rarely gone into. And I just think there's so much other things that we can be talking about without veering off to, you know, the kind of unfamiliar territory that we're kind of in at the moment. I just
this
think
is the, this
all
is
these
thing.
Other things could have been explored first. And then, by all means, go off and go nuts later on when you have established things.
Exactly.
They are not established here. Who?
Yeah.
This is the problem. There's no – in the mixture of all this sword and sorcery and fantasy and sci-fi and all the stuff that comprises Masters of the Universe, there is heart there. You know, you have to explore the characters and have a character-driven story with engaging characters and relationships so that you can actually care about the characters. I want to see He-Man struggle with, you know, being good enough to save people. You know, I want to see him deal with the Randor stuff, you know, that sort of the son that can never really live up to it. They completely got rid of the secret identity thing, so that's out the window altogether.
Yeah, we're not actually sure what even happened to that. Was it just a case of Randor always knew and it's like, oh yeah, don't worry about it, it's fine.
I guess. I mean, he turns into He-Man right in front of Skeletor, doesn't he? In the origin of Skeletor. I don't know. It seems like everybody just knows he's Adam, right? I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. Like in that origin story where he turned into He-Man for the first time, it was totally right in front of Skeletor, and I was just like, why did that happen? But then Skeletor actually said, "Who are you?" to him.
Yeah,
you know.
That's
so
true.
I don't know. It was really weird. That whole situation was weird. But I don't know. I get the feeling now that they do know. You know, it seems like because they talk to him as Adam.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely. He went. Yeah. I mean, even in the issue, he goes to the roof to change, and Teal is like, "Oh yeah, that's right. You need a lot of space to do that transformation because of the big explosion that happened." You know, whatever she says, she's something like that. You know, so she's like, "Oh yeah, go ahead." You know. Yeah. So I mean, they've kind of eliminated the need for Adam at this point, which. You know, that was an interesting little complication, I thought. I mean, I figure eventually he has to abandon the Adam identity at some point.
Yeah, I always felt like he didn't need to do that, though, until... I've always really liked the New Adventures comic story, where that's where he abandoned the Adam thing. Yep. And I always felt like that's the point they should have got to.
Yep.
When it gets to that point,
no
that's
choice.
When he... he had no choice. Then you abandon Adam, and when he comes back to Eternia to deal with everything that's happened while he was away, I mean, there's just no more Adam. He's just He-Man after that. So that's always the way it's been set in my mind. So to see it happen so early is just kind of a little jarring for me. It's just
It's like you've missed a great opportunity there as well with story.
Yeah.
There's so much opportunity being missed, it's frustrating. Let's just go for the shock factor. Aim squarely at those shock factors, because, you know, that'll win people over. And let's just forget about all the cool little beats we're missing. And it's just, it's just so frustrating, because it's frustrating, because there's a side of me that I don't want to be railing on a DC comic, and that in turn then eventually lead to them canceling a DC comic. Not that AIM, with the words of AIM and whatever flipping bloody will do that, but you know, you get my mean. And I think in some circles, some people actually fear that, you know, that could happen. No, it won't. Trust me, it won't. And so I would never say to people, don't buy the comic. Demand that it be better, though. Make it better. And I'm not saying Keith Giffen is bad. I'm not saying Poop Man is bad. I'm not saying anything is bad. But when you have when you do a comic, one of the first things you do is set up a creative team. How many flipping inkers were on that first issue alone? Seriously, it went through a few different artists. We were told this is going to be the creative team. They then changed it later on. We've had about 5 inkers alone on one issue alone. I think it was like issue 2 or 3 or so, where it's like we've got varying styles of art all over the place now. And the
I'm happy that they brought in Axel Jimenez, which makes me happy.
They brought in Axel for the mini comics. Haven't they?
No, he's on the main DC comic series now too.
We're not picking on the artists, because these artists were chosen, they were put on the comic and stuff like that, and so that's fine. So I would hate for anyone to think that I am slamming the artists. I'm slamming the work that they're doing in this particular publication. That's what I'm slamming, because I don't know if it's interference from Yon Hai that's coming down, and it's interfering with some of their writing. I dare say some of it is, because some of the way the dialogue is written seems completely out of kilter with the style of the other dialogue that's written. And forgetting about actual story elements, there just seems to be a sloppiness and a lack of consistency with this comic that we just don't see in any other comic. And as Masters fans, I feel that we're kind of getting the short straw here. That we've got all these surplus guys at DC, and it's like, chuck them on Masters and they'll do fine. And it's just, for me, that's not good enough. I demand better. I demand a better comic. I demand better art. And art is not subjective. You either get anatomy or you don't. And I wrestle with anatomy. And, you know, people can come back and fly back at me and saying, oh, your DVD cover's rubbish. Yeah. Yeah, I know they're rubbish. Progression, bro. I know that they're rubbish. I was still learning. They were my first gig. This might be this guy's first gig. He needs to be told he needs to improve. Just like I had to. All artists get flack. I got flack. And you either take flack and go with it and improve, which some of us, you're either the kind of dog to put your tail between your legs or bite back. I'm a bite back dog. So if someone tells me that my art is rubbish, I'll say, well, why is it rubbish? Well, your eyeballs are all over the place, your nostrils are this, your arms are too long. Blah, blah. Fine, fix it. I'll make it better. And that's what I had to do. When I was doing Masters of the Universe comic, I did one Masters of the Universe comic cover, and, you know, the boys would not let me go until I fixed King Randor's fur. That doesn't look like fur, Eamon. You need to go do better. And they kept, and I was like going so mental. No, Eamon, sorry, that's not good enough. You either get the fur right or it's not going on the cover. And they were really rigid. I was like cursing them, blinding them, calling them all kinds of names. Staples was called every name under the sun because I was like, he's been so fickle. But as a result of that, I ended up looking at other fur, and I rendered the fur well and ended up doing a relatively okay cover. So I'm not the kind of person to dish out criticism and then be the kind of person to shy away from it. If you dish it out, you can take it. And I am one of those people. So when people say, oh, you're just being unfair and look at your crap artwork, well, what point are you trying to make there? That is crap artwork that I made. So there is such a thing as crap artwork then. So it's not objective then, is it? There is such a thing as bad artwork. And I'm sorry, but some of the artwork in the Masters comics is just substandard. Not going to go as far as to say bad. It's substandard. It's not what we'd expect from a DC comic. It's not what we'd expect from a Masters comic. You know, maybe the Star comics in the 80s came close to it. With He-Man's puny little 2-inch sword.
Oh, those, the art in those comics. It was terrible. There was an issue with all the heroic warriors together, and they looked completely bizarre.
So
off-model, like, color.
It was unreal. You guys just didn't care, did you?
It was like, what? But Axel worked on issue 4 of the main series. That he put a Twiggit in prison with Teela. He was responsible.
Oh, that's
for...
right. Yeah. Yeah. See, getting someone like Axel, I mean, he knows Masters, so I think that's actually really great. And it's great to see someone from the forums as well, actually, getting a good job. And Axel's, we've all been watching Axel grow into a very, very, very fine artist over the years and stuff like that. So I hope he'll actually get to pencil a few issues. I mean, I haven't seen the mini comic that he's penciled, because his first actual big one, full-on one, was a mini-comic, wasn't it? It's going to be the latest mini-comic that we're going to get. What figure?
The unnamed one,
yeah.
The unnamed one, yeah. So we get this, the Axel Heminism. It'll be very interesting to see how that goes. So, fingers crossed, yeah. we'll all enjoy it. But
he's doing the Moduloc box, too, actually. He's,
oh, that's great.
The box.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just delighted someone from the forums is doing it, man. That's just someone from the community and people who are fans are doing, because as they should. But back onto the comic, quality is not subjective, boys and girls. Quality is not subjective. If you are in any doubts, all we need to do is look at last week's. Close your ears right now if you are listeners to Dexter or watchers of Dexter.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten to that season yet.
Right. Okay, so well, I better not mention anything then. But
don't spoil
anybody
for
who's
me.
Watching Dexter might actually be able to read between the lines and say, we deserve better. And
oh, has it gone off the rails?
I've heard a lot of people upset with the last season
I'm not going to go into too much detail, but just look at... sometimes there are opinions that are weighty, and I'm not, they're not necessarily mine, but they are the voices of critics. These are people that are there, that are experts. Fans, you are not experts. As much as you'd like to think it, no matter how loud you are, you're not experts. There are people who have doctrines in literature and art that give opinion for a living. These are the opinions that are valid. Some of us have more valid opinions than others. It depends where it's coming from, and it depends how it's said. It doesn't matter how it's wrapped up. But this idea that some things are purely speculative is a non-starter. You either get anatomy or you don't. You either know storytelling or you don't. There are things you do to make a good story, and there are things you do to make a bad story. Some of the things that have been done in these DC comics do not tick all the storytelling or art boxes. And therefore, and forgetting all that, then there's the sloppiness, the inconsistency of characters, the inconsistency of designs. Just all that stuff, while you do see mistakes in other comics, you don't see the level of mistakes as much as you do in this Masters comic. It has been the most mistake-ridden comic I've seen in a long, 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 long time. You know, you see some indie comics, really some indie college comics that might have some of these inconsistencies, but not a DC comic. And then the argument for change, this argument for, you know, we want to change. Right, what's the most popular comic at the moment? Or one of, well, because it's up for debate, isn't it? Everything's up for debate. One of the most popular comics is Scott Snyder's and Greg Capello's Batman. Is it Batman? Absolutely. Is it different? No, it's not. Does it feel like Batman? Absolutely. Is it of a high quality? Most certainly. Is it well written? Absolutely. Does it change anything from what we've known before? No. So the idea that to change something is to improve something is bogus. That is a bogus argument.
That should be like the slogan for this whole thing right here. That is the biggest point of this argument.
Yeah.
Changing something doesn't make it improved. That's not how you improve things, and I agree with that completely.
And I'll cite Batman, the Batman comic on that one, because you can take that Batman comic and it doesn't jar with anything, it doesn't fly in the face of other continuities, it's pure Batman, and it is brilliantly written, and it's standalone. So this isn't rocket science, kids. You know, it's not a massive ordeal to give us a really, really good Mass Universe comic that will introduce Masters of the Universe to people who would have been skeptical about it being cheesy and a bit naff. You know, you could have done that, and that's why it's annoying, because you've given us a comic that's kind of punching so hard in the direction, you've completely missed the punch. You're punching for something, and you missed. Yeah. That's what this comic book is. It's a great big thunder punch that misses.
It's important to boil things down to get back to the basics and embrace the things that worked the first time, not change them into something, twist it into something it isn't. It's becoming less and less like Masters of the Universe. I don't feel like I'm reading a Masters of the Universe comic. I feel like I'm reading a generic story about some other characters. They don't sound like the characters I'm familiar with. They don't look like the characters I'm familiar with. Like, what's the point of even calling it Masters of the Universe? At a certain point, it's so different from the source material, it isn't Masters of the Universe anymore, right?
True. Agreed. To flip everything back on its face now, because we're always afraid of, like, railing the whole time. One thing that is good about the comics. There are a few good things about the comics. We like the Sparrow. We like all these kinds of things, and we like an attempt at... I'm liking the attempt at making it a big universe thing as well. You do see in the comic where they're referencing the fate of the universe lies inside Castle Grayskull. That's kind of coming back into it now and as well. Some of the language being using is there's big stuff involved. I'm liking that kind of seeping back into it again.
Yeah,
so that's really great. But my favorite thing about all of the DC comics at the moment is, of course, some of the covers by our friend Dave Wilkins, and some of those covers. I mean, that boy is belting out the shiz right there. He's doing some great stuff. He gives the characters power and weight and everything. Admittedly, you can see where his heart lies, because one of the covers he's kind of gone and rejiggied for a poster print for PowerCon and whatnot and for conventions, where he's put the characters back in their original costumes.
Yes. Such a cool print, man.
Amazing, that is. I mean, that's your action figure backdrop right there, because, you know, I thought I was good at doing female faces for Masters, but by golly gee whiz, man, that Teela is beautiful. You know, the way he's drawn Teela, the way he's drawn the Sorceress, the way he's drawn, you know, King Randor's and Man-at-Arms faces and all these things. It's just, he's given these characters, wow, they're the Masters characters, but look at them, they're real! Woo!
You know? Dave's great.
And it's big, and it's grand, and it's ballsy, and it's epic, and they're chunky warriors with chunky... it looks like He-Man and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, and some of the Ed Benz stuff is nice, too. Some of the Ed Benz covers are not bad at all, you know? But
there was one thing I have to point out, though, from what you said. You were saying that you liked the language about Castle Grayskull having all this power and everything. But isn't that contradicting what He-Man already said in the final issue of the miniseries? They made it out like Castle Grayskull was a red herring all along. Skeletor had Castle Grayskull. Finally, he couldn't find the power in Castle Grayskull. And then He-Man finally announces, don't you get it? I am the power. Like, He-Man is the power? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I didn't like
how
that.
It makes no sense. Like,
I am the power.
That's a cool thing to say. That's a cool, badass thing to say to someone. But did it make any literal sense? I mean, if we're set or questioning these things, right, that alone is proof enough that this is sloppy going. See, if we're set or not sure about what's happening here, because you read other comics, and some things are unsure for a purpose. There are some things we're unsure of that's just sloppy. And again, I'm going to refer back to Dexter. And I think the word sloppy, I think everyone knows the little things I'm talking about, are sloppy. They're sloppy. There's no ifs, no buts, sloppy. And I know so many things are always put down to opinion or speculative. And it's like, well, but no, we have to have a tentpole to measure by. We have to have a quality bar to gauge. And if this is the quality bar at the moment, then the gauge is very low at the moment. The standard is quite low.
And here's the other thing, too. Skeletor's inside Grayskull all this time looking for the power. He doesn't find this massive-ass forge that's, like, beneath Castle Grayskull. Yeah. Right, and then He-Man goes to the forge, and then he finally gets the way that to battle the Horde. He makes himself some new armor and reforges his sword. Like, He-Man's a blacksmith now? Who
knew? You know, King Rand, Captain Randor did teach him a little bit, and we saw that in the Mike Young as well.
Okay, yeah. I guess.
See, like I'm so forgiving there on that, you see?
Yeah. I didn't like the way they changed the look of the power sword, though. I just
We can kind of put two and two together why this is happening, though. Why that kind of, because that's a rebranding attempt, I think. Because
I think so too. They changed his outfit, they changed the look of the power sword, and I was just like, ah, guys.
They always want to put pants on He-Man. What the hell?
Pants.
Yeah, I know. I think the thing is, it's like rebranding in a very literal corporate sense, because Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, all these superheroes, Thundercats, all have an icon, have a symbol, and Mattel have always wrestled and veered away from the Iron Cross. They've tried their best to veer away from the Iron Cross. 2002, we didn't even see the Iron Cross.
Right.
Asterisk.
The H. Yeah.
Actually, that's not the first release. The first wave of He-Man had the Iron Cross.
The first wave, and I believe the very first television advert, there's a kind of almost like a Captain America shield with the Iron Cross embedded in on one of the flashbacks. So that the Iron Cross is, but Mattel have always tried to get away from the Iron Cross and always, and basically from Thunder, from Battle Armor onwards, it's always been the H.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So,
and I like that symbol though. I like that version of the He-Man symbol. I'm totally fine with that being his logo. No. The one that looks like the Battle Armor H, or the you know, like that he had on like the Thunder Punch armor and stuff like that. I like that, and I'm totally fine with that being his symbol. I guess I don't know. I just have. It's the same thing I felt in the 2000X era when they completely redesigned that power sword. I always wanted to see the original power sword back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't really mind He-Man changing his outfit when it's necessary, because, come on, how many He-Man variants have we had? Yeah. It makes sense to me that for different occasions or different battles, the power of Grayskull would give him appropriate armor to do battle. I'm fine with that. But changing the sword is like changing one of the most iconic pieces of Masters of the Universe, you know? It's just like how I didn't like the redesign of Castle Grayskull. You can't change the look of something that's already like an iconic part of the brand.
It ain't broke, and, man.
Yeah, exactly. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that's the same way I felt about the 2002 Power Sword, and it's the same way I'm feeling about this new sword that he made himself. I don't know. I don't really like that.
Yeah.
It's a very odd choice. Now I know that the collar, the high collar, is a new 52 thing.
I was gonna say he looks so new 52. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
You know, in 20 years, people are gonna look at that redesign and be like, oh god, that's so like, you know, 2010s. You know,
yeah. It really is. Yeah. I mean, but I mean, and that was actually one of the first times I saw a comic. I thought it was like a 90s comic or something like that. But there's certain elements of the armor. I like the fur over the harness, kind of covering over fur a little bit. But why are parts of them glowing up now? You see Iron Man now. What? How are we expected not to think Iron Man when we see a red abdominal section that glows up like that?
Yeah.
What are we expected to think?
Yeah. He doesn't look. I don't know. It doesn't look barbarian.
Look like He-Man.
He-Man has to have some barbarian, even though he had like battle armor and stuff. Like, it still had that kind of barbarian Frazetta-esque flair to it with the furry shorts and stuff. Like, this is way too. I don't know. It just doesn't look right. It doesn't look. It looks like superhero-ish. It doesn't look He-Man.
But maybe that was the purpose. You see that? That's what I'm kind of thinking. I'm thinking that there's. I'm just. I'm up. I'm baffled by the thinking here. I am baffled because I'm like, well, maybe they're trying to do this, but that would make sense because there's, oh, maybe they're trying to do this, but that's. Every time I think of a conclusion or give them the benefit of doubt, I'm always just up against the brick wall. I'm like, oh, I'm kerfuffled.
too many cooks in the kitchen. I mean, we do point to Keith Giffen, we point to Pop Man, you know, but it's not only them. There's also the Mattel influence, which we've neglected to mention. Mattel is also involved in this comic, and they call the shots in certain ways as well. It's a back and forth. I'm sure DC makes decisions, but I'm sure Mattel Design does. You know, folks like Rob David, who's the head writer on the franchise over at Mattel, are making, certainly, I'm sure, making suggestions on the direction of the comic as well. So it's sometimes I think there are too many cooks in the kitchen here. Like, we need to strip it down to the basics, see what worked. Look at the old He-Man stuff. Look at what worked the most, what resonated with the most people in different aspects, and look at the mini comics, look at the 2000X, look at Filmation, look at that stuff, see what worked, and then try to elaborate on that stuff instead of just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. Well, this failed, you know, in 2000X, so let's change it completely and make, you know, make Teela, well, she was kind of always headstrong. Let's make her really nasty, you know, like this stuff.
Let's turn her into a trailer park trash. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, why?
She thinks everyone's looking at her butt.
I wonder why they're doing all this. You know, I a friend of mine was saying that it's probably because He-Man has failed a couple of times up to this point, right? He-Man has failed. The 2000X line failed in the cartoon. And they were pretty true to the old stuff, at least for Filmation, and, you know, they were kind of true to the Prince Adam, all that stuff.
Yeah, but it had its detractors too. It had 2000X had its detractors too.
And it bombed, though. It didn't succeed. New Adventures, well, it lasted a little bit longer, but it was not well loved at all. Too much of a departure. So maybe they're just like, well, let's, you know, the original line failed eventually. It was a phenomenon, but then it kind of fizzled out. So maybe they're like,
the original line lasted the best part of 7 years. Like,
yeah, you
know,
it
1981
did.
To 1987, that had a constant sales, and it was increasing every year until it petered off in 1987.
88, right?
Or 88. And
88 is when it ended. Yep.
From what we understand, the only reason Masters died off in 88 is because they oversaturated the market. And
yes.
Because they were oversaturating. They repeated those. I wouldn't go so far as to say 2000X was a bomb. I would put it down as to say that it struggled, and a lack of thinking and very short-sightedness killed it prematurely, when I think it might have been able to pull itself up a little bit more than what it was.
It was definitely a mismanagement from both Mattel overstocking the shelves with variants, and Cartoon Network screwing around with the schedule constantly for the cartoon, and then throwing in all these crazy, you know, stupid variants all over the place. I think that's what killed it. I don't think it was the.
I think if it had those other things, out of. I always would be hastened to use the word bombing on 2000X, because I just feel that the odds were kind of stacked against it, despite it of being a high quality. The comic was a high quality, the cartoon was most certainly a high quality, and the figures were very high quality, though they did drop the ball by not including the articulation when every other figure was going mad in articulation.
Yeah.
Because they were meant to be articulated. You know, you've seen the two-ups. All those two-ups are articulated more than the actual figures. So that was a drop there. So I think I'm hesitant to use 2002, because that's a bit of an anomaly, because there's too many ifs and buts there for me to lock down. I guess if you want to strip it all back, if it really was that good, then it would have been able to push through.
Well, I'm looking at it from Mattel's perspective, though.
Mattel considers it a failure.
Yeah.
And that's why we've, you know, even had problems with them wanting to put anything 2000X influenced in the classics line, because to them they're just like, oh no, keep that away from this line.
Yeah, nervous.
It'll kill it. It'll kill this line, you know. Yeah. So I think in Mattel's eyes it was a failure, and that's a shame, because it had so much potential and so much going.
But then to flip it on its tail, then we've now got the classics, a line of toys that are the toys to have. They are one of the most popular toy lines, if not the most highly sought after toy lines of the moment, and they have no entertainment to back it up. So, while I would never necessarily overplay that, because I know these figures are produced in smaller quantities, but still, we have a very highly successful toy line here in the times where Thundercats can't even get past a year.
Right.
You know, and with a cartoon. Thundercats couldn't even last a year with a cartoon. Masters has come back again, has gone back to what made it successful in the 80s, and what's after happening? Massively popular. So much so we're getting statues, we're getting pop vinyls, we're getting all these things that are not based on 2002 designs, not based on any other design, based on the designs that people grew up and loved, and people are lapping it up. I right now am wearing my Skeletor metallic gold belt. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, that's, you know, that is a very, very good point. Everything that's successful about Masters of the Universe right now is completely relating back to the original looks of these characters. Mm-hmm. You know, Classics is based mostly on the toys that we grew up with, or the Filmation cartoon series that we watched. The pop vinyls, the statues, everything that's coming out is based off of original Masters of the Universe and Princess of Power. That should be telling something to the folks at DC right there. That is what is selling. That is what we want. Mm-hmm. Masters of the Universe Classics has been going... We're in the sixth year of that toy line right now.
Yeah,
a toy line that, like you just said...
Yeah.
Yeah. A toy line that, like you just said, has been going without any sort of entertainment to back it up. It has been going purely...
Bios, yeah.
It's been running purely on the fuel of the fan base of Masters of the Universe. We have kept that line alive simply on nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And now we've got this DC comic who can't decide what it's doing because it's obviously not gearing towards new fans.
Nope.
It's trying to gear towards us who have been buying Masters of the Universe Classics for the last 6 years, and yet it's turning all this stuff on its head and, you know, trying to reinvent what we're already buying into. And it's, yeah, I think that really, it does say something right there. That says a lot right there about what DC could be doing to improve these books.
It's just, it makes no sense. It makes no sense because you take the DC versus Master Universe comic. Now, here's where we really can focus in on who is this aimed at. Okay. I don't know who John Constantine is. I don't read DC comics.
I saw the Keanu Reeves movie,
but from what I understand, I just take it on, I'm just guessing here, I'm guessing the Keanu Reeves movie has little or nothing to do with the comic book story. Or is it like
it? I don't actually know because, like you, I've never read anything about Constantine in comics.
So I don't know Constantine. I thought he was a Vertigo character.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Like, I know who he is, but I never read any of the Constantine comics.
Who's the other girl in the story? Who's the other woman in that story?
The one that's hanging out with him?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea who that is.
Right. So, why am I caring what these characters are saying? Why am I caring? And Constantine, fair play to him, man. I mean, he sparked up how many cigarettes in that one scene? That was fair going, Constantine, man. Jesus, every scene was like maybe it was going out the whole time, you know, because cigarettes go out.
So he was relighting it.
He was just relighting, and it's like, oh, we got a really cool frame here. Yeah, lighting cigarettes. Like, let's just do that lots of times. That's just gonna make me like a bad moment.
He's the head of the Justice League Dark, right? The occult, like the ones.
What's
who
the
all
Justice
have
League
magic.
Dark? I
they're
don't
like
know
all
what the Justice League Dark is. What's that?
They're like all the DC characters heroes who are occult based. Like they're all like magical based characters, and they have their own like group of their own league. And I think Constantine is like the head guy of the Justice League Dark. So. And he's
See,
like,
I didn't know any of that until I started reading this book, and that's kind of the thing I pieced together myself. I understand, like, I don't read a lot of comic books. I have no problem admitting that. I'm reading the Master stuff and the Ninja Turtle stuff, and that's it.
You're a loyal man.
Yeah. That's all I'm really into right now. And like, I have a general understanding of the DC universe and all the characters from all my years, you know. So that's what I'm really basically running on here is my general understanding of what's going on.
The only reason I know it is because of reading forums, like on the He-Man.org when people talk about stuff. Like, I know who Constantine was, but I wasn't familiar with his lore or anything like that. Like, I only read He-Man now, too, really. I don't read Masters of the Universe. I used to read more comics in the old days, but I haven't been reading them in a while.
Well, I mean, I'm an avid comic reader. I read, you know, about 10 titles a month. You know, I read about 4 to 8 comic books a weekend. You know what I mean? I read my comics. Now, granted, they're all, you know, virtually, you know, X-Men, I love the Valiant stuff and Eternal Warrior and all that kind of stuff. And anything with Thanos, I'll buy. So I do like my comics, and you know I bought quite a few of the new DC 52, and I thought they were all rubbish, except for Aquaman and Batman, and I kept buying Justice League for a while, but I couldn't subscribe to what was happening in it. But that's just, it was just a DC thing. I know DC can be quite weighty and stuff, and I dare say if you know your DC, it's very rewarding. But when people say pre-crisis DC, I have no idea what that means. I do not know. I don't know who Constantine is. I don't know. Why do I care about this? So, back to the point. I don't know who these characters I'm reading are in. So, who is this comic aimed at? Is this comic book aimed at me? The Masters fan? Because that's a blonde Marlena, and Marlena ain't no blonde.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know that was Marlena at all. And then they said her name, and I went, you mean like Queen Marlena? Or is this some other DC character that I don't know about? Because this doesn't look like the Marlena I know.
I'm guessing it's because they're trying to – remember at the end of when Randor finally sees Adora, he says, Marlena? You know, so they're trying to tie that she looks like her.
So she's blonde now. Like,
yeah. Okay. I guess.
What is the fascination with turning all the redheads into blondes? I don't understand.
No, I think they're gingerist. Sorry. They're gingerists. Yeah.
Gingerists.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Why has that become a thing? I don't understand why that's become a thing in the modern Masters of the Universe. Got to make all the redheads blonde now.
Got to make the women wear less, weaken them down, and change their hair color. That's what you do. You got to make them wear less because that makes women more powerful, clearly, in lots of people's eyes.
You know? Just have them in front of their father and their father's friends. Take your clothes off in front of Decker, Teela, and in front of your dad.
Yeah, what was that? Also in the DC comics, how come Skeletor is just this massive mammoth of a man with giant tusks coming off of his helmet and no lower jaw? Like, what is going on there?
Completely ridiculous. It's
completely ridiculous. Tusks, I guess.
He's absurd.
Tuscador. It's
Tuscador Skeletor. Yeah, exactly. Let's okay. let's make him look like one of those New Adventures characters that everybody loves so much. Yeah, that's.
So what's their thinking there on that? Well, I mean, what do you guys think they're thinking? Because I am scratching my head because I'm reading a comic that's completely alienating me.
I don't know.
I don't either. Like, I read it and I'm like, I don't know. I'm curious to see where it's going to go. And I guess I'm trying to treat this as like its own little standalone thing that doesn't have to have anything to do with any other stories or anything else going on. That's just the way you got to treat this, I think.
Yeah, and
I do like some of the things of it were kind of neat. Like they did actually mention that Eternia was the center of the universe. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yes. I was like, that's the stuff.
Yeah, I was like, see, that's perfect right there because that's what we've always been told, you know, it's the center of the universe. So I'm glad that that's kind of got a key into it. And I like the idea, like they mentioned at one point to Skeletor, like, why are you bothering coming to Earth when you live on a planet that's, you know, rich in magic? And he's basically like, well, because everybody uses the magic there. You've got a handful of people using magic on this planet. That means there's a lot for me to take. And I'm like, that makes sense to me. I'm cool with that, you know, like Skeletor found a bigger source of magic, so why not go try to take it, and then he can turn around and use that to take Grayskull, you know, whatever, you know. That sounds like a Skeletor plot to me, so I'm okay with that. It's just, I don't know, I agree with Eamon about the alienation here, because I just, there's certain things that I don't know who they're directing this at. Like, do we have to know the DC universe and Masters of the Universe to understand this comic? Because that's almost the way it feels to me, because I feel like they're not making this, they're definitely not making this book for anybody that might want to walk in and pick it up and see, oh, I think Superman and He-Man might fight each other in this. I'm going to buy this and just watch that fight because that'll be fun. That's not what it's looking like so far. You know, it's like...
I'm sure other listeners can relate to this. You know, sometimes when you've missed an issue of a comic and then you read the following issue without knowing what happened in previous issue? That's what this comic book feels like. I felt like I'd missed something. And that is not good. That is not a good first issue. That is not a good way of introducing a universe. It's not good. You read all the Marvel comics, every issue one. That's the great thing about most Marvel comics. You can pick up pretty much most Marvel comics, and they will introduce to you in some fashion, either a bit of narrative at the start, or they'll write it in such a way that it doesn't alienate, that it invites you in. If you look at the style of the way Marvel write their stuff, I find Marvel a lot more inviting. They cater to new readers more. Now, I'm not saying that they're rigid to that, but it just seems that if you miss a beat in DC, you're screwed. And I don't want to be, I don't know who Constantine is. Why do I care about this dude who cannot stop smoking over in the corner?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, at least Evil Lynn looked better in this.
Yeah, she doesn't seem insane anymore.
Yeah, too. She actually looked a little cunning because like she totally, it seems like she totally tricked them into like thinking she was a prisoner and she was going to help them, and then whoop, she zaps He-Man away to where Skeletor is. You know, it's like she baited him, and that was kind of cool. But can I just point out that Evil Lynn has had more skin color changes than I have ever seen. Okay,
she's a chameleon.
She has gone from being bright yellow to kind of a palish skin color to being like a grayish color, I'd almost say, in 2000X. Then she was purple in like her Maleficent look here in these comics, and now she's just got normal skin tone. She's just a normal, you know, like what is going on with her? She's just all over the place.
Well, she's crazy, isn't she? She's written as, again, another woman where they've been made weaker by what is deemed might be thought of as clever writing or reimagining. Evil Lynn is just some crazy broad in a volcano. What kind of personality? I did not get a powerful sorceress type woman that could depose Skeletor or Hordak vibe
and
from her.
She's written so inconsistently. She's completely off her rocker in the miniseries. Yep. But then she's depicted as not being insane here. And then in the digital miniseries, she sleeps with the guy to get something from him, which I thought was really tacky and totally cliche and not something Evil Lynn would even lower herself to do. Like, you know,
it's a slippery slope when you start, relegating women and doing things that you might think improve them. Rarely in anyone's eyes does giving them less clothes and making them more crazy going to improve them. Across the board. So I don't want to suggest anything else but that. But you all need to be looking at the way the girls are written in some of these things, because you know strength is, it's maybe not what you think it is. It doesn't involve massive cans.
I do hope that they fix
sometimes it can. I mean, you know, if you get hit with a pair of those, it can hurt like hell. You know.
Well, let's Daniel,
you
got
weapons, don't you? Weapons.
But I don't try. Yeah, it's not fun jogging without a sports bra.
It's not, you see. And you can imagine charging into battle with those things, never biking on horseback. So, you know, poor old Teela is being massively compromised here with her skimpy little outfit.
Yeah, that's silly. Hopefully She-Ra fixes all that. I really do. Everything. I hope so. Yeah, look, I hope so. I've enjoyed the Dispara stuff. I've enjoyed the build up to She-Ra. So I'm really hoping that, I'm hoping that She-Ra is going to be the redeeming quality of these Masters of the Universe comics.
They'll kill her off before she
dies. They'll just kill her.
I like the fact that the Horde are almost swarm-like as well. When you see them, they're kind of swarming. You know, there's dudes on bikes, hover bikes, and there's steam and pollution coming out of them. And I like that. That's a little attention there. That's like, okay. Because that was very kind of Filmation, that Etheria was this lovely paradise that's been polluted and being dredged through and because of all this stuff. So I like that that's still there. So there is definitely... It's not that bad. There you go. Masters of the Universe by DC. It's not that bad. That should be the big punchline on it. I want a big flash on the next comic. You know, Comic Geek Speak or Comic Book Resources. Masters of the Universe, number 3. It's not that bad.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I would like it if they, like, did an issue that just kind of focused on He-Man and, like, getting into the nitty-gritty of what makes He-Man work as a character, because I'm not feeling it so far in this. I really want a good He-Man story, you know?
I do too. Yeah. I think that's what we all long for. I mentioned earlier that I'm reading the Ninja Turtles comics, and let me tell you guys, IDW and their Ninja Turtles comics, that is how you write new stories for a beloved 80s property. Those comics are awesome, and they're exciting, and they're... Yeah, I mean, like, they're really fun stories. They're entertaining to read. They haven't done any wacky redesigns for no reason. All the characters look exactly like you'd expect them to look. And the stories are just fun. I mean, they totally pull from all these different
you know, versions of Ninja Turtles Entertainment that there have been over the years, and they found a way to make it all work in this brand new story. They've basically started over. I mean, they're telling a brand new Ninja Turtle story, but it feels familiar and it feels right, and it's just a lot of fun, and you're excited to read what's going to happen next. And that's what I want.
Is it based on the cartoon or the old? No.
It's its own thing. Like, the IDW comics are its own thing. And I love it. I mean, it's so great. And that's the kind of feeling I want to have about these He-Man comics. And I just don't, you know? It's so frustrating.
And it's not because we're older. You know, people say, oh, we're old and we're just cranky. We can't accept change as fans. That's not it at all.
That is not it, because I don't feel that way with the Ninja Turtles book, okay?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you have to capture the correct feeling of what resonates with that property and what makes it what it is. You know, that's what you can change what you want as long as it works, as long as it captures the feel, you know?
Right.
Quality. I think there's just the word is quality, and quality has to mean something, because if you start relegating everything to being subjective or opinion, you may as well just not have the word quality. You remove it from the dictionary. Quality has to have something, and we need to measure it by. And right now, I'm measuring the Master Universe comic book against all the other DC comics, which seem to be of a slightly higher quality, and most of the comic books on the shelves have been slightly higher quality. You know, but it's interesting to know that. That IDW can produce a comic book of Ninja Turtles that's entirely separate from everything else and yet be entertaining and still be very true. So it's not rocket science. It's like, this is the only way it can happen. And it's just, I don't understand this kind of the argument that, you know, oh, things had to be updated. Well, why? They weren't explored very much in comic book history. Updated
exactly.
Maybe later.
Right. They weren't. They never had the chance to explore that stuff. That all the pieces are there. All the elements are there. All the storylines that they introduced and ideas that they introduced were just scratched the surface. They did dig into it a little bit in MYP and in the Filmation cartoon. You got to see some of that. Elaborate on that. Take that stuff that we loved before and explore it. And then you can explore new areas once you establish that and start exploring things that we've only seen the hints of. Then you can build on that. That's how you do it. Not
absolutely.
Goes back to my Picasso remark.
Yeah, absolutely.
He went nuts because he understood what he was always doing. If you to change something, you must first understand what you're changing. And I don't see that here. That's the problem. I don't see a familiar attorney. I don't see the familiar brand that I grew up with. And this is not me saying that Filmation is the end-all, be-all. It's not. That's not what I'm saying. But we all know what He-Man feels like. Heck, even the movie at times had a feeling of He-Man. You had a feel. There was a vibe, a tone. The MVK
really
Creations comic have it.
Yeah.
Filmation has it. All the early mini comics have it. They all have this vibe and a feel to He-Man. And you to change that into something else, you must understand that and what those little key ingredients were. By all means, if you can show us that you understand all this stuff, by all means, go and mix it up later. But that's my point. The fact that Teal has been relegated to this shows me that you don't understand what Teal's role was. The fact that you've busted the sorceress like this, it shows me, and you've, especially something like Evil-Lyn, who's been just relegated to a regular old witch gal that's a bit crazy and has some slightly lesbian tendencies, which, fine, that's great, but it's just, you're not putting it in there as a character development. If you want to make her gay or whatever, by all means do it as a character thing, but just kind of nonchalantly just put it in there as a little bit of sexual tension between two females as a way to titillate, it's just a cheap shot, because that's all it was.
I thought it was cheap, too, that she just had slept with some dude just to get him to give her...
Yeah, you know what I don't need in my He-Man comics? Sex. Okay?
That's just
another thing I don't need. Yeah. I don't need it. You know... Yeah. If I talked about earlier how I didn't like He-Man killing, but I think even worse is just I don't need these characters to have sex with each other.
No.
Okay, that's just not something that I want to picture with these characters. That is not needed. It's not going to drive any sort of story. That is there for the sole reason of putting sex in a book, and we don't need that. Yeah,
and that's not to say you can have romance. Like, you can have, like, you know, I like the Keldor and Evil-Lyn thing that was happening that got completely ruined when he becomes Skeletor. I like, you know, the Randor and Marlena.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That absolutely should be there. I mean, we should have the Skeletor Evil-Lyn connection. We should have the He-Man Teela connection, you know, the She-Ra Seahawk connection, or however we want to do it. That's cool. We got to do that. Leave the sex out of it. We don't need to see it. We don't need it referenced. We don't need any of that. Yeah, we don't need
to. You can Heavy Metal magazine for that. Hey. You know, if you want to watch, read sex comics, go buy a Heavy Metal magazine.
Somebody order a pizza?
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. Well,
but I mean, so I don't even know
where to go from that.
If for argument's sake, any of the powers that be are listening to this very podcast, what would be, because, look, obviously whatever's happening is a Masters comic book is penciled in. But what can we do as fans? Because I would never say, people were holding me to account to this, and I'm like, well, actually, no, I'm not saying that at all. I am buying this comic. I am buying this comic because I want to support a Masters Universe comic, and I want to see that DC knows that they can make money from Masters comic. You have no idea how much it is that, I'm biting my tongue buying a comic book that I loathe. But that goes to show you how much I love my He-Man. And I dare say there's lots of other people like that, you know, who really don't like the comic, but are buying because they want to support this. But, you know, if we were to say, what do you need to really look at to kind of bring this comic book, kind of bring it back around or pull it out from this kind of dredgy, gritty, for grittiness sake, sloppiness dredge that it's kind of in at the moment? What do you think would be the key things that could be done to kind of bring it back to a more familiar state of He-Man?
Yeah. I was going to say, they have to give the characters their personalities back. Don't change their personalities. Give them, like Skeletor, for example. Skeletor has become this generic sword and sorcery, humorless bad guy. Skeletor has always had that sort of sardonic, dark sort of sense. He's evil, but he's very sly, but he's also has that sort of wit. You know, give him personality. Give him Teela. Give her a personality back. That's a big thing I think they should do. And focus more on character-driven storytelling. Character-driven storytelling always works. It's for all the adventure in Lord of the Rings, okay, and Tolkien's stories. You care about these characters. You care about what happens to Frodo and Samwise and the Fellowship of the Ring. Focus on the stories, and then let the adventure develop from there. Those are my two big things. And then the redesign for redesign's sake, right out the window, man. Just like go back to the basics. Go back to what people love about the look of those characters and stay true to the heart of what those characters are. That's what I would say.
Embrace the source material.
Yep.
Embrace. I mean, that's... Yes.
That is just the biggest thing for me right there. I think that is the biggest thing that will fix these books. You know, abandoning the change for change's sake, get rid of that. Look at the history of these characters, these personalities, how these characters have always interacted with each other, and let's see more of that. You know, the stuff that you're doing with Adora right now is actually entertaining, and we're actually at a point where we want to see where this is going.
Yeah.
We need that kind of feeling for these other characters, you know. Let's humanize them a little bit more. Let's give us reasons to care about these characters. Give us a little bit more of a connection that we can feel with them. And that's the kind of thing I want to see more of in these books.
Well, I have an amazing idea of how we can solve all this problem in a true 80s style fashion.
What's
the Bobby Ewing method.
It was all a dream.
It was all a dream. It was all a dream. Prince Adam jumped took a bad mushroom with Cringerel back one day, and he's waking up in the shower, and he's like, oh, look, that's after happening. So there you go. That's
He-Man's
what we do.
He's just taking a nap.
So
he's leaning up against a tree, taking a nap. He wakes up. Yeah. Cringer's sitting next to him. Cringer's talking.
Been tripping for 3 hours.
Oh no!
That is amazing.
Oh, I don't know, Adam.
That would be epic.
That does it, folks. Right there. That is the perfect way to cap this off. I think that was awesome.
Ending up the moral at the end: never eat strange mushrooms.
a moral at the end of that comic, yeah.
Don't see emotions and he won't get crazy.
Oh my goodness.
Somebody needs to draw that. Somebody needs to make that happen.
Done deal. That's
Loki
it right
with a
there.
Magic mushroom. Hey! Have some!
Loki? Yeah, it was Loki's fault. Oh, God. That's amazing. Awesome. Well, we've been talking about these comics for just about 2 hours now. So, I don't know. You guys feel like we've said enough? Do we have anything else we want to throw in there at the tail end? Any final thoughts you want to say?
Make it better, please. We want the DC Master Universe comic book. We're buying the Master Universe DC comic book. I'm supporting it. But please make it better. It needs to be better. Don't tell me that it's not that bad. That's not an argument. That's just saying it's not that bad, which is actually rarely means it's any good. We need improvement. Anyone who already likes the comic will definitely like a comic book that's then improved. So everyone's happy.
Issue 5
could you not want an improvement over something? So people who are like saying, oh, I like it the way it is. Yeah, but if it's improved, that means it's better. That means you'll enjoy it more. Why would you not want that?
That's true. Issue 5 gave me hope. The whole stuff with Adora and Shadow Weaver was great. Mm-hmm. He-Man had a little bit of a sense of humor with Mechanek. I like that. I like He-Man occasionally making a little quip here and there. That was good. More of that. More personality for the characters, more poignant moments. And the action, of course, needs to be there too. But let's mix it up a little bit with some good character development.
Right,
definitely.
Right. I'm with you, Danielle, that's the same point I'm at. I'm buying these comics. I'm going to keep buying them because it's my He-Man comics. Mm-hmm. I want to keep reading them. I want to keep supporting it. But also I do have hope that maybe they're just, kind of getting themselves going. Maybe it is going to pick up. And reading the Despara stuff and the last few things we've seen with Adora and Shadow Weaver and everything, I am very interested in that. And I do have hope that this whole, like I said, the whole She-Ra thing might save this for me. Like, maybe if the stories that we're getting with Adora continue to expand and get better and we start seeing more of that with the other characters, that's all I'm asking for. I want that. And so I'm going to stick with it, and that's what I'm hoping to see. As for the DC versus MOTU stuff, I don't know how. I'm going to read it. I'm seriously just treating it as its own little standalone thing that I could take or leave at the end of the day, depending on how it goes. So we'll see.
Because it's too early to tell, I think.
I'm sure Stratos would do really well against Green Lantern. I mean, really.
Shouldn't he fight like Hawkman or something?
Yeah, he should fight Hawkman.
And even at that, you think Stratos is going to. Hawkman is an animal, isn't he? I don't know much about Hawkman. I know he's got a very nice hairy chest. Hawkman. I remember the Ed McGuinness figures, even at hairy chest in the Ed McGuinness figures. Remember that?
He fights Zodak.
Yeah, they both have hairy chests.
So She-Ra saving the day. Well, boys and girls, that's something, isn't it? I would ever see that happen. But
I was going to say, how's that?
She does brilliant.
Yeah. How do you feel about She-Ra being in this, Eamon? Like, do you like the way that?
Oh no, I've always said that if She-Ra's handled well, by all means include her, and this is how you handle She-Ra. Because it was almost like almost a missed opportunity. I always felt in the old Secret of the Sword that the fact that she was a bad girl was never explored fully, and it's a gold mine of research. I've always said emotionally, the emotional baggage of all the characters is a gold mine that's never been explored in Masters. Adam and his father, Adam his relationship with Tila and all this kind of stuff. There's so much to go on there. The odd relationship between a man at arms and a sorceress. All these other things.
Yeah.
Keldor, Skeletor, Evil-Lyn, the works, everything. There's so much to explore there that it isn't tapped into. So, having She-Ra and all the gang and like that and coming back in it, I think that is one of the good things that is about the DC comics, that She-Ra is handled with a lot of gravitas. And I like that, seeing that for once she is handled with some weight and she's given a bit of kick-assery now.
Yes.
I'm excited to see what happens there. I'm dreading other things, but that aspect, I think we're all in agreement on, is the exciting part. So, powers that be, that listen, focus, listen to what we like. We're buying this. If we don't buy it, you won't do it. You won't make it.
Did you guys notice they changed the King Grayskull thing back to 500 years in the issue, in the, one of the issues, I think it was the one where Adam was making the sword. It's like, why did they switch it back again? They made Hordak a million years ago with Zordak, but they switched King Grayskull back to being like 500.
Oh man, the timeline's all over the place. Who knows what's going on? I'll just try to ignore the timeline stuff.
Yeah, you're better off. Yeah. I just want good stories. Like, I see again.
Yeah, good
we're
stories.
We're not those kinds of fans either. We're not the most fickle of fans in the world either. We can give us stuff out of timeline, for God's sakes, but just make it fun and good. It doesn't matter when it is. Just make it fun and good.
Yep. That's it.
There you go. There we go. Awesome. Well, hey, there's going to be more of these, and you know, with the DC versus Masters of the Universe books just now getting off the ground, I'm sure there will be plenty of opportunities for the three of us to get back together and talk about this some more, and hopefully in the future we won't sound like we're just ranting and raving the whole time. Hopefully we will actually be enjoying things a little bit better and sounding a little happier about things. I do always feel bad when I put together these podcasts like the Man of Steel one, where I feel like I'm just harping on the thing the entire time. But, you know, I think it's good for us to come together and discuss this sort of thing. And if the people who are behind the books are listening, I hope they do take, you know, don't take offense to what we're saying and do, you know, understand that we just love this property. And there are things that we just want to see happen with these stories. And it would be great to kind of see a lot of this other stuff start taking shape in the books and something that we can really get behind and enjoy. That's what I'm really hoping for here.
Yeah.
So like we got behind the figures, man. Like we got behind the figures. Are those figures exist because we chose to make them exist? We put our cash down on the table and says, yo, give us those now. I really
give us those now.
That's why I have no problem, like, you know, doing the grassroots stuff to get the sub to go through. Like, it's like it's up to us. The fans are the ones who keep the line going. You know, if we want the figures, we got to keep supporting the line. And I'm glad that so glad the line went through for 2014, because we're getting amazing characters. Too Bad and Scorpia, Blade, like all this great stuff. Glimmer,
Blade
really
is amazing,
cool stuff.
Isn't he?
He's awesome. The chainmail, like I was looking at the figure in the case, and the chainmail is so detailed. Like they did such a great job on that.
Oh, was Anthony DeLongis there this year?
He was not. He didn't.
No, he couldn't come.
I'm sure he would have been delighted with that figure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I actually emailed him after the show and asked him what he thought of the figure, and he's like, "It's a great representation of the character I played in the film. I love it."
That's so cool. Awesome. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap things up for today. So once again, I want to thank my very special guests, Danielle and Eamon from the Roast Google Dinner Podcast, for joining me here in the Geek Easy. So guys, we're going to do this again sometime, right?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much for having us, Uncle Dan. It's been awesome.
Thanks, Dan. Well, it's been a blast.
I feel I've gotten off my chest now. You see, I've got off my chest. I did it on the forums. I dipped my toe into the forums.
You vented.
I dipped my toe and my spiked, leathered, booted toe into the forum. Awesome. And now I've managed to say it. So I've kind of got it off my chest. I've just been dying to talk about it, because it's just sometimes, and I will say this fully aware that I'm going to get flack for this, sometimes we need to be told why something doesn't work. I know that the movie Spawn is not a great movie. I'm not quite maybe articulate enough to actually break it down and tell you, well, it's bad because it does this with the character, this is why it does that, and that just doesn't go because it doesn't make sense from what they set up here. The same problem with this Masters comic. It's sometimes we need to be told, well, this is why it's actually not getting a bit of critical flack, because it's not doing what it's supposed to. You're not playing by rules. So just bear that in mind. So when people are saying, well, you should like something, but know that it can be crap. I like the Spawn movie. I know it's crap. And I'm not going to argue with anyone to try drive it down their neck that I say it's awesome, because it's not awesome. I enjoy the hell out of it, just like I enjoy Barbarian Queens and those Lou Ferrigno's Hercules movies. I love those, but they're rubbish. But I'm not going to get offended if someone tells me they're rubbish and I'm crazy for liking them. I am crazy for liking them. Deal.
There you go.
Everybody has different tastes.
That's true. Everybody does have their own tastes and their own opinions, and that's perfectly cool. Yep, there's nothing wrong with that. All right, Eamon, what would you like to plug today? I always give everybody the opportunity to plug podcasts that they're on or their Twitters, so go for it, my man.
Ooh, plug. Well, I mean, all of those of you who buy Hot Toys, well, you got to hear the Hot Toy Cast. Our podcast is, like, I'm very proud of it. I just record it and host it, but my co-hosts are the real brains behind the podcast. So go on iTunes or go on any of the podcast forums. I'm even on Stitcher now as well, the Hot Toy Cast. We just got off a great interview last week with Trevor Grove, who's Hot Sideshow Collectibles, like the sculptor. He is one of the finest sculptors on walking the earth today. And I guarantee you've got something of his at home. I guarantee you have something of his at home. He's one of the greatest sculptors. He's just finished up on the Breaking Bad license, and he's done an amazing, like, Doctor Who license for a company here in the UK, and he's done, of course, all the Sideshow stuff. So go check out the Hot Toy Cast. It's hosted by myself, Jeff Parker, Mike Crawford, the Mike Crawford, as in Captain Toy Mike Crawford, and one James Duble. I'm very proud of. You won't hear as much as me as you do on maybe Roast Goobled in another podcast, but what you will hear is a show that is squarely aimed at discussing figures like on the more high end expensive scale that we have
right.
like get mommy and daddy to buy us.
Or sell a kidney. Awesome. Awesome. All right, Danielle, anything that you want to plug?
Well, there's this great podcast called Roast Goobled Dinner. I have a TV show. I do host old horror movies on TV, so you can check out my website at shillingshockers.com or just look up Penny Dreadful Horror Host. I have nothing to do with that Showtime series that's coming out called Penny Dreadful. They owe me residuals for my name.
What is that? Yeah,
I know. What's up with that? It's my life story without me in it. And we have some appearances coming up, depending on when this airs. We have a bunch of appearances coming up at conventions like the Rock and Shock Convention, Monster Fest, the Coast City Comic Con, and the Rhode Island Comic Con in Providence. So come on out to those shows if you're listening, and come over to my table and say hi. If you're a He-Man fan, I'll give you a special little gifty if you come to my table. A special spell just for you.
Ooh.
So. Yes.
Excellent. All right. And guys, as always, you can find everything that I'm doing at pixel-dan.com, where you can find all of my toy reviews and, of course, episodes of the Geek Easy podcast. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher. So however you would like to listen to us, please subscribe, follow the podcast, give us a rating, whatever you want to do there. Check out some of the past episodes, man. Last episode, I had interviews with Brian Dobson and Townsend Coleman, two very, very, very cool voice actors. Yeah, and great, great guys. Awesome guys. I got to hang out with them both at PowerCon. So if you didn't catch that episode, make sure you go back and listen to that one. It's a ton of fun. And stay tuned right here. More episodes are to come. And once again, got to give a special shout out to the sponsor of the Geek Easy podcast, superpowercollectibles.com. So go over there and spend your money. Buy some toys for yourself. They're good guys over there. Good guys.
Booyakasha!
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Geek Easy. So until next time, I'm Pixel Dan. I'll see you guys later.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. Any animated series discussed are copyright their respective owners. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.